the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Golf Podcast. So we're going to talk tonight about a really interesting topic, how to choose the right club for those in-between distances. Everyone knows what we're talking about there. It's that those distances that you're just in between two clubs and you're just not sure which one to go with. And the first thing that you lose is confidence. So we're going to talk about how to confidently, you know, approach this with the right club and know that you've got the right club in your hands. And trust me, that's going to give a huge boost for those in-between yardages that can give us some trouble. Before we get into that, Mike, we mentioned on last week's episode, we said, start sending in your questions so we can answer them on the show. Really cool. We got our first one came in from one of our listeners, right, actually in Sweden. And really cool, really great question. Mike, let's have a listen to that now.
Hi, it's Kevin from Sweden. And first of all, I want to thank you both for this great podcast. I just love it. So great work. And my question is, which golfer do you believe be the golfer of the year in 2017? Both male and female, and why?
All right, so first, Kevin, thank you for your kind words about the show. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate every one of our listeners because you guys are the reason that we do this first and foremost. We appreciate that. But Mike, let's jump right into it. I mean, lots of big names. Let's start with the PGA Tour. I'll be very honest with you, and I think you're the same boat as me. As far as the LPGA Tour goes, yeah, I don't watch it enough to make a really educated guess as far as that goes of who's going to be top dog there. I mean, I see and I hear a lot about, you know, Lydia Ko. We had the pleasure of having Ledbetter on the show a while ago, maybe a year ago now, David Ledbetter, and I know that she's worked with him. So I'd love to see her do well. I know she did, but if you are a fan of the LPGA Tour, we actually have a really great writer on golfficity.com, Beth Bethel, and she covers the LPGA Tour in depth. She does the fantasy side of it, and she's got a really great take on it. So if you're a fan of the LPGA Tour, I say definitely check that out. Like I said, we don't watch enough to really speak about it in depth, but let's just talk about the PGA Tour. What you're thinking, Mike?
It's hard to really think of anyone other than Hideki Matsuyama right now. I mean, you know, easily it's funny how you can so quickly become the hottest player on the planet quickly, yeah, and then kind of maintain it for a few weeks. And then who knows, maybe you fall off. We saw that with a bunch of guys. And right now this guy is unbelievable. He jumped to like sixth in the world rankings. He lit it up down in the Bahamas at Tiger's event. I mean, he was unstoppable. I think he's won a couple of times before that recently or had some really solid finishes, you know, worldwide. I mean, I think he's poised to win majors this year and do a lot of awesome things. That's who I think I'm going with for this.
Dude, a couple of times, get this stat. This guy has won one in his last four of five appearances.
Okay, even better. Wow.
He's got four wins in five appearances. Mm-hmm. I mean, out of control. I mean, three of those were PGA Tour events. Two of them were on the Japan Tour, but unbelievable. But yeah, you're right. We see these guys kind of come and go, and they get streaky at kind of the right times. We saw that.
Kind of like us.
Yeah, just like us. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, we saw that with Jason Day in the playoffs when all of a sudden he won like three of four events. We saw that at the end of the year last year with Dustin Johnson. Really, you know, once he put that putter to work and with his, you know, distance game, he was unstoppable. But yeah, it's just amazing how many names could really be said here for a contender for player of the year. And that's what I love so much about where the game is at right now. You know, sure, Tiger, you know, in his heyday, it was fascinating watching him win week in and week out, but you kind of almost knew it was, everybody was a long shot against him for player of the year and for FedEx Cup champ and stuff like that, and for all the majors. And now when you see where it could be anyone, I think that adds more excitement. Yeah, it was incredibly great to see Tiger back and playing well last week. But you think about it, it could be Jason Day, it could be Rory McIlroy, it could be Dustin Johnson, it could be Jordan Spieth. Stenson absolutely could be. And I mean, these are all guys who play incredibly well in the majors. They play against the best competition. Their game really, you know, comes out of nowhere. So I don't know if I could just pinpoint just one. I mean, if Matsuyama continues this trend, then absolutely he's going to be almost impossible to unseat. But I got to think we're going to see another strong run from Jason Day. I don't think he's going to be, you know, here, you know, number gets that number one spot and then here and then gone, you know, and fades away. Right, I know he was dealing with some injuries and stuff like that. But between him and also Rory, you know,
sneakily
playing really well. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I don't know if I would put money on any of them. But I guess if I had to just take a shot in the dark this early, I got a feeling about Jason Day playing well again.
All right, we're going to have like a friendly wager, you and I, just for bragging rights. You're going to run with Day, and I'm going to run with Matsuyama. And then at the end of the season, we'll come back to it and see what happens.
Right, we'll come back to at least see which one finishes better.
Right, exactly. You know, it's great. I mean, the one thing I love about this stuff, Frank, is I love when guys get on these little streaks because that's fun for me. I love when Spieth was so hot that year with the Masters and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was great to watch him continue to dominate because this sport is so hard. The fact that you continue to dominate week in and week out, that excites me. When you have like Russell Knox wins and the next week Emiliano Grillo wins, and then it's all great to see all these new faces picking up the trophies. But I love when the guys are hot because then I kind of latch onto them and I become a fan for that short period of time, and I try to study their swings and try to mimic what they're doing and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and one thing that's I think we can learn, we always try to say what can we learn from it, from being fans. Yeah, it's great to watch, it's fun, but what can we learn from it? And I think when you see that streak, sure, any of these guys who are hot enough to be winning, you know, 3 out of 4 events, 4 out of 5 events, whatever it may be, everything's working. You know, they're firing on all cylinders. But there's one common thing that I always see. We saw it with Spieth. We saw it with Dustin Johnson. We're seeing it right now with Matsuyama. It's that their putting comes on strong. We've talked about this before. That's where the money's made. That's where you win. And it's the same with our game. So if you're focusing on one area where you want to really become great in order to make your scoring much better, it's got to be there. It's got to be with the putting. Just kind of looking at these statistics, you know, Matsuyama, just talking about him right now. I know there's not a lot of this is the 2017 stats, so I know there's not a lot of events that people have played in, but, you know, first in birdie average, first in scoring average, first in the money, obviously. But here's the big thing. First in putting average and first in putts per round for the first round. And first from birdie or better conversion percentage. So it's telling you not only is he getting on the dance floor, he's sealing the deal.
Yeah, that's key.
And I think that's what you see with these guys when you see they're really trying. It's that their flat stick is working.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Absolutely. That's where it's at. That's where you score.
So speaking of the flat stick, the other thing I want to talk to you about, because I want to get your take on it. Have you been watching Bryson DeChambeau with his new side saddle putting stroke?
No, I heard it. I haven't seen it yet.
All right. You got to check it out. I know on Golficity, we had kind of put it out there on Facebook and some of the videos. And it's just like some people are saying like he's just gone way too far. This thing looks crazy. I know he's like a tester. He likes to tweak different things, and he's like a mad scientist out there. But I'll be honest with you, it looks funny.
Does it really? Well, he's got a very strange swing too. You know, I mean, he's got those irons that are all the same size,
same length, right? Yep. Exactly. But man, take a look at it because I'm interested to see your take on it. And I think what we'll do is we'll post something in the podcast Facebook group too and see what everybody thinks of his new thing. Because I'm hearing everybody calling it from genius to bush league.
Yeah, so, I'm watching it right now.
Yeah, what exactly is it? I'm not sure. I certainly wouldn't recommend anybody going out there and trying it.
He's dropping putts with it though. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, I got a feeling he'd drop putts no matter what he did.
But yeah, true enough.
It's pretty wild. But and we touched on it really quick, but what do you think of Tiger's comeback?
Tiger's comeback was actually, I mean, I think everyone out there it probably all feels the same. You know, no, I don't think anybody's disappointed. I think everyone is happy with it, or at least, you know, content with the fact that, you know, we don't even care that he fell off at the end and finished second to last because it doesn't feel like he did that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think we weren't looking for a win. We were just looking for some like great drives. I mean, he was tagging the ball off the tee. You know,
we were just looking for him to get through 4 rounds.
Exactly. And he made it through without any. I was just like so nervous nervous. I didn't want to see, as a big fan, I didn't want to see him start limping or grabbing his back and, you know, there we go again, you know. But he seemed strong. You know, his chipping was great. His chipping was awesome. His putting was great. You know, he just couldn't, he couldn't hang on to fairways, and that kind of got him into a lot of trouble. But
I think it's just that he's just got to get back into the groove, because he saw that one round. I think he went 5 under on the front and then just kind of fell apart a little bit on the back. I think just by getting back into it, he'll start
mental
to,
stamina. Yeah,
exactly. But it, what I like to see is, again, I love the sportsmanship. You know, I loved seeing all of the support from other PGA Tour players, having them back. You see a lot of guys on social media that we follow just like taking pictures with them, just being happy to having him back, because they know too that he kind of elevates everything. He brings another level to it. I mean, we're talking about one of the greatest, if not the greatest, to play the game. You know, that's that's an arguable thing. But regardless, if it's somebody who's in that conversation and they're actively in the game, we're not talking about someone from the past, that's always going to elevate the whole game.
Sure.
So
sure.
I think it's great. And I think 2017 could be a really big, interesting year to have all of that great talent and all that great competition we talked about, and then add one more factor,
add him back into the mix. It's going to be I think 17 this year coming up is going to be a great year for golf.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And it's going to come up quicker than we think. We get this short little break here in December, but then January kicks it all off again in Hawaii, and we're back off and running.
Hey, can you and I get out there one year and cover that event?
Oh, that I would love to. Like the Sony, you know, or one of these ones, right?
Because, you know, this cold weather, this is like the real cold's coming in now.
I know.
You know, I just want to escape, you know, and go over there.
We got snow on the ground here, so there's no chance of getting on that golf course.
I'm getting all the emails now. Our course is now closed for the season, so I'm getting all the disappointing emails.
Yeah, those are the ones you don't want to see.
That's all right. I'll be indoors soon swinging the club, so it's okay. It's all good.
So real quick, before we get into tonight's instructional article, I just want to highlight a couple of things from the Facebook group. One thing that I thought was really cool, I was kind of jealous of checking that out. Just scrolling through here, Steve from Edinburgh, Scotland. You see, he got to play a little night golf, and the pictures are really cool.
So cool. That's such a great thing. I've never done that.
I know, it's like a real life like pro tracer. You know what I mean? You get to see that ball flight through the air. Just such a cool visualization.
It's really cool. And what do you say? You put about Christmas lights or something in the hole?
They put put some Christmas lights on a few of the pins. So they can see the pins. That's really cool. That's a great idea.
Great idea.
But I guess, if you can get out there at night, sneak out there, or if you have access where you know somebody where you can get out on the course, this is such a cool thing to try. And I've seen these before online. They have the golf balls that, you know, they have like an LED or something in them and they light up. But that's a really cool thing. So I saw that. And the other thing somebody brought up, let me see here. I'm just scrolling through. Genesis Cortez mentioned, he kind of tongue-in-cheek said, you know, has it been 6 months already, TaylorMade, because they got the new M1 driver. I mean, what do you think about that, Mike? Because it's kind of crazy. I almost feel like it dissuades me from buying a driver, because I know it's going to be outdated in 6 months.
I know. It's strange. I mean, I don't update things like that. I'm using the same driver for the last 4 years. So it's shocking. It's weird. It's strange. I mean, they are the best in the business in that space, the drivers.
Well, so look at all the guys who have the choice are now playing them. Tiger, we saw playing them. Rory playing it. You know, everybody is. But they're excellent drivers.
Keep up.
And look, I'm not saying that like just because a new one came out that yours is bad because it's 6 months old. But it kind of like gives you that itch, because it's like they market it pretty well. They tell you what the new features do. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like they're kind of cannibalizing some of their own stuff. I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
I always buy the last year's model when I go buy a new driver, because I feel like it's severely discounted.
Yeah.
And I think the technology is so close that, you know, I think I bought the Covert versus the Covert 2.0 when that came out for Nike. So, you know, and I think I'm in the market for a new one. So I think I'm going to end up with the old TaylorMade something. I just don't need the new one. It's crazy. It's too crazy for me.
You know, that's true. It is a really great way to score an excellent, you know, price, because you just buy one that's one or two models back and boom.
I've never spent more than $150 on a new driver.
Yeah. I don't blame you, because you look at these things. I mean, $400, $500 when they launch, and then a year later, they're half that price.
Exactly. Right.
So, but really cool stuff. So anyway, you know, keep that coming. We love hearing from you guys. I mean, between the, you know, all week, you know, between the show and prepping and stuff like that, you know, it's just a great place to kind of escape and talk golf. So if you haven't checked it out already, definitely check out our Facebook group. I know I mention on every episode, but it's something that I really enjoy, and I love hearing from people, from listeners from all over the world. So just check that out. Go to Facebook, just search The Golf Podcast, or in any one of our show notes for these episodes every week, we link to it. So you can go to golfissy.com, click podcast, and then you could see links to the group. It's a free group. You join it, and then you can talk golf. And we do a good job working in there and make sure to keep it free of spam and all that other stuff. So it's just a fun space to talk about your game. So definitely check that out. Now, Mike, we want to talk about those in-between yardages, how to kind of hone that in. So let's do a quick word from our sponsor and then jump into it.
This episode is brought to you by Daily Energy. Hey, Frank, I'm an early riser. I love to hit the gym before work. But if you're like me, you'll agree there's nothing worse than dragging your feet out of bed in the morning with a lack of energy. That was happening way too often. But then I heard about Daily Energy, the natural one-a-day solution that's helped me get my day started with much more gusto.
Yeah, Mike, Daily Energy delivers the antioxidant equivalent of 10 servings of fresh fruits and veggies. Think about how long that would take to prepare that every day. And here's the best part. Right now, just for being a faithful listener of this podcast, you can get the same benefits and save 30% when you go online to getdailyenergy.com/golf. That's getdailyenergy.com/golf. Like you, Mike, I keep pretty busy, and we all know that living that healthy lifestyle takes time. So I consider having this all-natural tool in my belt a huge part of my daily success. So remember to check it out and get 30% off right now at getdailyenergy.com/golf. All right, Mike. So we're talking about those in-between yardages. So how often does this happen that you got that wedge shot or something like that in, you see it up there, you're starting to get it close to the ball, then you start, you grab your rangefinder, you grab your Arcos app or whatever you're using, right? And you look for that distance and you're just hoping it comes up that it's what you consider your full swing exact distance, right? So for me, like a pitching wedge, when I see that 125 number, man, I love it. I just go up there, I swing freely, all the confidence in the world. I know what I'm doing, no problem. But then I get like that in between, like 130, right? So now I'm in between my 9-iron and my pitching wedge. And all of a sudden it's like, what do I do here? Do I take a nice easy 9? Do I try to swing hard with my pitching wedge? What do I? And all of a sudden I see that confidence meter just kind of like, go through the floor. And what happens, all too often, if you feel like you have too much club in your hands, sometimes what do? That dreaded deceleration. We talked about this before, and now you're way short, or you feel like you don't have quite enough club and you're trying to stretch it a little bit and you swing out of your shoes and you don't make solid contact and it's, pushed right, pulled it left, whatever it may be. So there's so much that goes into it. And it's really what we're going to talk about here. It really is more in your mind than you think it is. So what we're going to talk more than anything about is how to make the decision, but be confident in the decision you made and why you should be confident. And if you can be confident and work with it, those in-between yardages are going to seem a lot less scary, so to speak.
Yeah. And what's even more tougher, I guess, about this situation, I find myself in it all the time. I mean, I think we all do. I mean, it's very rare we're going to find ourselves with that perfect 125 and the perfect 150. You know what I mean? So, not only are we in between, but then we have wind at our back. There's bunkers in front. So now our minds are spinning, so there's a lot of different variables. But on a rather regular calm day, I just, my biggest thing, Frank, is let's just use this example. If I'm 100 out, if I'm 95 out and I have my 100 club, you better believe it, I'm swinging a little lighter. Mentally, I'm thinking to swing lighter. Yeah. And I always end up coming up short.
Right. Exactly. Because you decelerate or you don't put a good swing on it, whatever it may be. So the more thing we're going to try to promote here and what we're talking about, the most crucial thing is finding a way to put a good swing on it. The good swing is going to matter a lot more than the club selection in a lot of ways. So let's talk about ways you can do this slowly, like working your way systematically into a good decision. And the first thing to do with that is to first start by eliminating what we call the big mistake. All right. So what you can do is by take the bigger or the greater of the two evils out of play. So for instance, let's go back to our example here, where you, or it could be really any yardage, where you could either feel like you could play your club that might be a little long or your club that could be a little bit short. Well, the first thing to assess is, where could there be more damage? Is there more damage long, or is there more damage short? So look at that area around the green. Identify anything that could be a big problem. If it's protected by a lot of bunkers up front and you've got nice room to work with behind, then maybe it's better just to err on the side of that longer club and then have confidence in that, knowing that decision, saying, hey, if I'm long, at least I'm clear of the bunkers, you know? Or What if there's a pond behind the green? You know, and now you get a little bit of a flyer and man, you're in that pond. You've got that penalty strike. Right. There goes your hole. That's where it may say, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to back it down. I'm just going to play that club that's a little bit shorter. And if I'm short, I'm safe, you know? So at least you're taking those major hazards out of play, so to speak. And by just simply doing that, you're going to find that you have a lot more confidence. So remember, if that hazard is short of the green, err on the side of that slightly longer club. If the hazard is over the green, turn around, use the shorter club. And you don't always have to hit great shots in order to, you know, shoot good scores, but you need to avoid those big mistakes. We talked about when your round goes bad, when the wheels really come off, it's usually because of a big mental mistake that's been made. So, you know, allow those hazards out there to help guide your club selection. In a way, it makes the decision a little bit easier because you know what's out there and you can start to swing with confidence. And confidence is something we've talked about in a lot of episodes, and we'll talk about it even more because it's such a crucial part of the game. So that's a big thing. Now, you may say, well, Frank, not on every hole is there a very clear cut, you know, obstacle that one sure. versus the other. You may say on some, well, sure, there's some bunkers in front, but behind there's a drop off. And either way, I've got to play the right distance or whatever it may be. Or you may say I'm playing a course that doesn't have that, you know, it's not as challenging. It's the slope rating is a little bit lower or whatever it may be. Well, here now you could just kind of switch your mindset. Instead of playing defensively, play a little bit more offensively and play for a position. Here, and this is what the big thing that's going to come into play when you're playing for position is taking a look at that slope of the green. And I mean the physical slope. I'm not talking about the difficulty rating. I'm talking about the physical slope. So here, golf becomes a lot like playing billiards, or playing, you know, pool, some people call it, whatever it may be. You want to think one shot ahead. You want to put yourself in a position where you can make the highest percentage chance of your next shot, which in this case is going to be a putt. So we've talked about this a little before, erring on the lower side, trying to stay below the cup so you can putt uphill. So here, again, we start to think, all right, I'm faced with that same shot. It's 130. I can hit either 125 or 135, and I'm looking at the pin and the green slopes, you know, up and away from me. In that case, I say the smart play is to use my wedge, be 5 yards short, and putt uphill, rather than using my 9 iron being 5 yards long and then trying to come back down that hill. Because those sliding downhill putts can be a real pain. We're actually going to do a whole episode on that coming up, because there are going to be times when you're going to be faced with them, but you can play that smart play.
Frank, I got to interrupt you for a sec. Do you reassess your yardages during the season, or do you just stick with that for the whole, every time you go out?
Unless I've made a significant equipment change or swing change, I'm honestly pretty consistent. I pretty much know my yardage. I know you've been talking in previous episodes about how your yardage has been getting a little bit longer, which has been a little confusing. But for me, I've been pretty straightforward.
I'm wondering if amateurs like us should go out there and do this every now and then, because I feel like our bodies change. You know, if you're working out a lot, your legs are getting stronger, you might get more power, you might get more distance, you might not really know your yardages. I think number one is obviously learning your yardages. You know, the purpose of this conversation is we know our yardages, but we face that situation where we're in between clubs. But I just feel like I'm always all over the place with my yardages. Maybe I don't really know them to a T, that could be very helpful with this as well.
Absolutely. No, I mean, look, when you know that, like, talk about the pros, right? The pros know, they're not working within like us, like plus or minus 5 yards. They're working within a yard or even feet, you know, and it's because they know them. They're so comfortable with it. They use it. You know, they're constantly measuring that. One thing that, and this is a little tip, a side tip that I talked about on a previous episode, but I'm going to mention it here. I think something that people, a little bit of a trap people tend to fall into is that they really try to hone their yardages in on the range and trying to get an idea. And one thing I would caution you with, I think one of the biggest things that's going to change consistency in your yardage is going to be equipment. And if you play with a range ball, you know, and we've all seen the range balls, they're often outdated. They've probably been hit and, you know, picked up by the machine 10,000 times. They're just not going to perform the way a brand new ball out of the bag that you're playing, you know, and probably a ball that's worth $3 versus a range ball, which is worth 20 cents. There's going to be a difference there. So just be mindful and cognizant of that. Just because your wedge is 125 every time on the range doesn't mean it might be that way when you're playing, you know, on the course with your own equipment, with your own ball. It might be a little bit more distant. So it's something just to be aware of. But it is something that you can practice, you can get a feel for. And I think a good way to do it is just to start being more aware of it. You know, when you are hitting the shots out there, just kind of mentally recording it, what the distance things traveled each time. And then you start to hone it in and get used to it. And it's something you pick up over time. I've been playing the same clubs for 3 seasons now. I've been playing the same ball for 1 full season. I'm at a point now where I just kind of know what, you know, within 3 yards or so, my distance for my clubs.
Okay.
And that's where I kind of get used to that. If all of a sudden there's a major change, you know, things can change, weather, elevation, you know, it's something to account for. So be mindful of it. But the more you play, the more that kind of comes to you.
It makes sense.
So those are a couple of big things. Like I said, first, the strategic part of it is playing on the defense. We always talk about it being like a quarterback in football. You know, for our overseas listeners, American football, we talk about what a quarterback does before every play, just like looking over the defense. Same type of thing in golf. You want to look over the defense, look for what those hazards are, where you can get in trouble, and err your club selection on ways to stay away from that and avoid the big mistake. And the second thing being, like I said, playing for that position, trying to stay below the hole, putting up hill where you can. But here's the thing, and this is kind of a little but very important secret when it comes to club selection, and this might be the most important thing to take away from this episode. When facing yardage that is in between clubs, the reality is that both clubs can work out just fine. And if you can let that sink in, you're going to start to see that confidence coming back, because it's when you feel like the club doesn't work, that's when you lose that confidence. So think about it. You might be stressing out whether you hit, like using my same example, whether you hit that pitching wedge or the 9-iron, and you're stressing, and all of a sudden you're watching that confidence disappear. But here's the thing. Remember, there's likely only a 10 to 12, maybe even less yard distance between those two clubs. Like I said here, I'm talking 125, I hit my pitching wedge, 135, my 9-iron. It's a 10-yard difference, okay? Mm-hmm. So think about that. I mean, here's a very clear-cut example. Imagine you're standing in the fairway, you're 155 to the hole, and with a good full swing, you can hit your 7-iron about 160, and your 8-iron goes about 150. So you're officially in between clubs, you're at 155. But think about what that really means. If you hit a 7-iron just right, your ball should end up 5 yards or so long. That's only 15 feet. You know, on the other side of that, you know, if you hit the 8-iron and you end up 5 yards short, it's 15 feet short. So as long as you put that ball on a good line, you're still going to have a makeable birdie putt. So that's something to keep in mind. Keeping that good swing, keeping the ball on line and on target is going to be more important than trying to finick with the speed of your swing, a 3/4 swing, or whatever it may be. So that's where it's going to get really dramatic. Now, I know some people are going to say, well, Frank, there's also those much more major in-betweens, which would be when you start to work that 100 yards and under, and you're starting to work those wedge shots. That's about feel, okay? So if you had, like, let's say, for me, my full swing I have for a 52 degree wedge shot is 100 yards, about 100, 110 yards for me, right? So you might say, well, 75 yards. If let's say you don't have another club in the bag to hit below that, now you start working into real true three-quarter swings, whatever.
Sure.
That's a different game to me. To me, that's something that has to be practiced on the range, on the course, wherever you can, to get used to three-quarter swings and half swings. And we could talk about that more in future episodes. What I'm talking about here is when you're in those in-between full swing type of shots. But remember, if you focus more on making a great swing than, you know, having to obsess over picking the perfect club, chances are you're going to end up in much better positions than when you get up there. And I've done this so many times, I know, I kick myself for it. You know, I go up there to the club and I completely miss, you know, I end up pushing it way, you know, off course or whatever it may be. And I say, the first thing I say is I just talked myself mentally out of that club. And when you do that, it's going to be a lot worse than hitting it pure and just going a couple yards further than you wanted or a couple yards short. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. It kind of sounds like, you know, in a nutshell, you want to be short unless there's a hazard, like you mentioned before. I mean, there's no reason if you're trying to attack a green from 170 out and, you know, there's fairway in the front of the green and there's rough and whatever it is behind, you typically want to be short of it, you know, if you had to choose, if you're in between clubs. Is that correct?
Yeah, you want to play your percentages. But if in that case, like I was saying, if you had a green that sloped away from you, down and away, then it might be better to be a little long because you're thinking you're putting uphill. Uphill putts, the make percentage on uphill putts is so much more than downhill because you can really go after it.
Right. So I guess you'd have to see if you can – from 170 out on an unfamiliar course, it's going to be tough to gauge where the green slopes.
It's going to be tough. But if you can keep an eye on either the yardage book or sometimes just something is – you know, the whatever it may be, sometimes just even the scorecard will have a little bit of an idea of way that green slopes, and just kind of be smart about your club selection there will help.
Do you think it'd be helpful for golf courses to give you the green sheets like the pros have? Would you actually use them?
You know, I'd like to think I would. I'd like to think my game is as accurate as the pros too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes for me, I'm more in the way of the safe play of just still aiming for the fat part of the green,
yep.
So to
okay.
speak. And
likewise.
I'd rather get on the greens, you know, the putting surface than mm-hmm. worry about like those guys. They're looking at the slopes. They're looking at wherever it may be. But that's something to be said for this too. You know, sure, putting uphill is great. But if you're at a point where maybe your accuracy is not quite there, maybe the better play is to aim for a fatter part of the green. You know, mm-hmm. if the green is wider short and more narrow as it goes longer, then maybe play that little bit less club and aim for the fatter part of the green, or vice versa. So
yeah.
That's the way my play usually is. And even honestly, par threes, it's taken discipline. Because I used to always go after the pin, and I noticed that a par three would either be a par or a double bogey, you know, and I tried to get away from that. I tried to get more consistency. So what I've really started doing is, especially on par threes where they really like to tempt you with tough pin positions, protected by hazards, you know, short side, whatever. My primary focus on par threes has just been hitting the middle of the green. Because I know no matter what, if I hit the middle of the green, there should be almost no reason why I can't two putt and come out of there with my par. So just a little side note.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So that's everything we have. Like we said, you know, everything we have here, it's going to be in the show notes. So if you need a reminder for this, if this is something you struggle with, check it out. Go to golfizzy.com/episode146. You can even print this article out. It's a nice short one, and throw it in your bag as a reminder if this is something you really struggle with. But again, if you can just get to that point where you can get that mental side, that confidence back by doing a smart strategic play, but also understanding that the difference between those clubs is not going to make such a dramatic difference. I mean, in reality, to be way off, you almost have to be two clubs too much or two clubs not enough, then vice versa. So if you noticed here, in between yardages, we've spent a lot more time talking about the mental side, the preparation and the execution mentally, than we talked about any type of technique. And there's a reason for that, because this is a really big mental part of the game. So that's what we want to convey here. So try it, get out there. If you're in a place warmer than we are right now and hopefully swinging right now, give it a shot. Let us know. Let us know if this little bit of advice has helped. And if so, post it in our Facebook group, or you can also tweet us at Golficity. And again, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Kevin for sending his question in. If you have questions for the show, send them to us. Email us at podcast@golficity.com. You can, you know, type your question and send it. Or if you're a little bit more ambitious, record yourself and we'll play it on the show here. You could do that with your smartphone. Just do a quick, you know, 10, 15 second clip recording your question. And just like we did today, we'll play that right here on the show. So we want to hear from you guys. Make sure you get that in. All right. That's everything we have. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see everybody again next week.